During the Six-Day War between Israel and the Arab nations, the USS Liberty was sent by Johnson to collect electronic intelligence in the Eastern Mediterranean. The clearly marked U.S. intelligence ship was 14 miles off the coast of Israel in international waters. Israeli surveillance aircraft flew low over the ship and clearly identified it as an American vessel. At 2 p.m. that afternoon, the USS Liberty was attacked by three Mirage III fighter bombers. From the onset of the attack, the fighter bombers were jamming U.S. signals. Not only were they jamming U.S. signals specifically, they were also unmarked. The fighter bombers strafed the ships with their cannons, dropped conventional munitions and napalm on the ship, repeatedly from stem to stern. After the Mirages had done their work, the ship was hit by medium bomber Dassault missiles, carrying napalm and other munitions like white phosphorus. The USS Liberty was then attacked by three Israeli torpedo boats bearing Israeli flags. Then the torpedo boats began strafing life rafts in the water, an international war crime. While all of this was happening, the oversized American flag flew clearly above the ship. The attack on the Liberty went on for hour after hour after hour. During the entire attack, the USS Liberty continually called the Sixth Fleet that was nearby, begging for air support or rescue. Two aircraft carriers in the Med responded by launching fighter aircraft. Unbelievably, they were recalled by the White House. Rear Admiral Geis, then commanding the carriers in the Sixth Fleet, called Washington personally to confirm the recall order. Secretary of Defense McNamara came on the line, and then President Johnson himself told Geis, "I want that goddamn ship going to the bottom. No help. Recall the wings." Imagine being Admiral Geis begging the president to allow you to defend an American ship that's under attack and being told by him that he wants the ship going to the bottom.
Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution.
The Liberty attack happened on June 8, 1967, and you're listening to This Week in Radical History, produced especially for you from the mobile fortress of Glee Glee Studios. Inspiration for this ditty came from the Slingshot organizer, and some radical info can be found at the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website. Again this week, some audio is being gently lifted from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York and the Neighborhood Network of Columbus, Ohio.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
This Week in Radical History for June 8th, in 1806, the Founding Fathers most conservatives like to forget and barely talk about in the history textbooks, Thomas Paine dies in obscurity on this date. He was a revolutionary radical writer and inventor, and this Founding Father would have a whole 10 people escorting his coffin on his death. To this day, no one really sure where his remains are. Author of The Rights of Man and Age of Reason, his radical thoughts included the following on religion. Quote, "I do not believe in the creed professed by the Jewish Church, the Roman Church, the Greek Church, by the Turkish Church, by the Protestant Church, nor any church that I know of. My own mind is my own church. All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no more than human inventions set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit." Thomas Paine. Also on a State in Wisconsin News in 1867, Frank Lloyd Wright, master builder, lives in Richland Center. Wright admired the anarchist Potemkin, who would stay with him while visiting in Chicago. As a review of Wright's FBI file revealed, the Fed's interest in the architect expanded far beyond his pacifism. Hoover's men recorded his involvement with the Wobblies, his continuing attempts to combat the U.S. government's dehumanization of the Japanese during and after the war, his rebel-rousing speeches on college campuses, his works in international socialism and third world governments. Hoover's snoops, however, was only a minor irritant compared to the real damage done by the Federal Housing Authority, which routinely denied financing Wright's projects, and the U.S. Federal Home Loan Association also refused to underwrite mortgages of Wright's homes. Let freedom ring. Also on June 8, 1904, a battle between the Colorado militia and striking mine workers in Dunnville ends with 6 Union members dead and 15 taken prisoner. 79 of the strikers were also deported to Kansas, courtesy of Rockefeller, who owns the state government and militia. Rockefeller following the Golden Rule: if you have the gold, you get to rule. Rockefeller's bought and paid for sheriff would say about the lack of rights offered to the arrestees, habeas corpus, hell, we'll give him postmortems.
And in 1972, it was the United States' turn for an allegedly accidental bombing, this time in Vietnam, where U.S. supplied and armed and guided South Vietnamese planes dropped napalm on a group of civilians fleeing a rural village near Saigon, which had just been attacked by U.S. warplanes. A lone photographer happened to capture several images of the civilian survivors, which included a 9-year-old girl, Pen Tai Kim Puk, who had stripped off her burning clothes and yet sustained life-threatening burns on her upper body. That photograph, which won a Pulitzer Prize, was published in American newspapers and helped fuel anti-war sentiments among a majority of Americans. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, June 8th. This Day in History is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis.
Lastly, for June 8th in 1990, Guatemala, U.S. citizen Michael Devine, kidnapped and murdered by CIA-paid military officials, led by School of America's two-time graduate, Colonel Julio Alperez. This week in radical history, for June 9th, 1623, New World shenanigans. On negotiating a treaty with the Potomac River tribes, the Indian chief and 200 of his followers dropped dead from poison wine. And they are the savages. More New World news not read about in your textbooks. Thomas Morton is the first person deported from the New World on this date in 1628. The Puritan colonists did not like Morton's more native-friendly and more successful Marymount colony, where they dared to treat native peoples with dignity and dared to dance around a maypole from time to time. So the Puritans kicked Morton out and burned the colony to the ground. Yeah, so our country is so much built on religious freedoms. More terrible Native American news. In 1863, Nez Perce Reservation, Idaho, was reduced to one-tenth of its original size to accommodate white settlers and railroad interests.
And in 1957, the final blow was dealt to the anti-communist campaign of Senator Joseph McCarthy's House Un-American Activities Committee, which had wrecked the lives and careers of thousands of America's promising artists and professionals by accusing them of belonging to or sympathizing with the Communist Party. A number of prominent intellectuals refused to comply with the committee, including singer-actor Paul Robeson, and historian William Mandel, who told the committee members they were insane. On this day in 1954, an army lawyer, Joseph Welsh, reacted to the committee's interrogation by asking McCarthy on live television, quote, "Have you no shame?" 1 week later, the U.S. Senate passed a resolution denouncing McCarthy. And those are just some of the events on world history that took place on this day, June 9th.
On this day, June 10th in 1692, the first victim of the Salem witch trials in the Massachusetts Bay Colony was executed by hanging. Bridget Bishop had been accused of witchcraft when the daughters of a local minister began to have periodic nervous fits, and their father believed them to be possessed by evil spirits. Under interrogation, the girls claimed that Bishop and later others in the small Puritan town had cast spells on them, and the provincial magistrates obliged by placing the accused on trial. In all, 13 men and women were sent to the gallows, and one man, a farmer by the name of Giles Corey, was crushed to death by having large stones piled upon his chest.
Again, not in your history books, but on this date in 1871, American military forces land in Korea. They'll be back years later. The only thing ever good to come out of the Korean War, the TV show MASH. As I said in that show, war never ends. They just take it on the road.
And you can do the same thing if you please.
On or around this day in 1899, federal troops were sent from Texas to the town of Wardner, Idaho, whereupon they arrested virtually every male citizen they could find and placed them in several stockades. This was in response to a miners' protest, which had resulted in several armed conflicts and the dynamiting of the Bunker Hill Mill Works in Wardner 2 weeks earlier. The protests began when the rail barons raised their fees for transporting mine ore, and the mine owners tried to cover the expense by cutting the miners' pay and increasing their hours. With over 1,000 miners and other townsfolk corralled in a guarded stockade with no sanitation and only minimal provisions, the Union efforts in the region were effectively crushed.
This week in radical history, for June 11th, 1898 in Cuba, U.S. Marines land in Guantanamo Bay during the Spanish-American War and decide it would be a great place for the military to imprison, interrogate, and torture prisoners and not have to answer to U.S. constitutional laws.
On this day, June 11th in 1913, the United States General Pershing, who was placed in charge of the U.S. occupation forces in the Philippines, launched an assault on a group of some 500 Filipino Muslims who had sought refuge in the crater of an extinct volcano known as Budbagsak, killing almost the entire group, including many women and children. The Philippine Muslims were among the most determined resistors to the American occupation and were known for their use of suicide attacks, but the Americans in the Philippines were far more brutal, often massacring entire villages and committing other atrocities. There is evidence that Pershing was generally less inhumane than the previous commander in his suppression of the Philippine resistance, but he considered this particular group, which declined all diplomatic overtures and coercion, to be a potential threat, and so no lives were spared.
Also for June 11, 2002, Earth First activists win $4.4 million in false arrest suit against Oakland police and FBI. They originally charged with bombing their own car. No one has ever held
the FBI
responsible for the bombing.
On this day, June 12th, in 1963, U.S. civil rights leader Medgar Evers was assassinated in the driveway of his Jackson, Mississippi home by a white supremacist vigilante, Byron De La Beckwith. Evers was a World War II veteran who had participated in the Allied invasion at Normandy. He began working with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or the NAACP, in the early 1950s after he was denied access to the polls by a white mob. Evers also challenged the segregationist policies at Mississippi State University, which at that time did not admit African Americans. Evers' murderer, who was an active member of the Ku Klux Klan, was tried and acquitted twice by all-white juries, then finally convicted in 1994 after new evidence suppressed during the original trial was uncovered. And in 1982, a gigantic march and rally, the largest ever in U.S. history, converged in New York City's Central Park to demand the elimination of nuclear weapons worldwide. Fully 1.25 million people jammed into the park's largest open field and an adjacent field to hear speakers and musicians, including actor Orson Welles in one of his last public appearances, Pete Seeger, Rita Marley, Bruce Springsteen, Mario Cuomo, Helen Caldicott, James Taylor, Jackson Brown, Linda Ronstadt, and more. The rally was held in conjunction with the United Nations Special Meeting on Disarmament. 1 month later, President Ronald Reagan withdrew the United States from negotiation for an international treaty banning the testing of nuclear weapons, and the following year he proposed the development of a space-based network of allegedly defensive nuclear missiles called the Strategic Defense Initiative. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, June 12th.
On this day, June 13th, in 1971, the New York Times began publishing selections from the Pentagon Papers, a top-secret document entitled The History of U.S. Decision-Making in Vietnam. The papers publicly revealed the lies told by the government surrounding the Vietnam War and the true nature of U.S. foreign policy in Vietnam. The public exposure of this information infuriated and humiliated President Nixon. Recognizing that the document threatened to further erode public support for the long and costly war, he imposed a censorship order, which was later overridden by the Supreme Court.
And on this day in 2002, the United States formally withdrew from a previously binding anti-ballistic missile treaty with the Russian Federation of Former States of the Soviet Union. The treaty had been negotiated between the U.S. and the Soviet Union under the Andropov administration, and shortly thereafter, U.S. President Ronald Reagan initiated the so-called Strategic Defense Initiative, or Star Wars, plan to place U.S.-controlled weapons in space. The Soviets and many Americans argued that this violated the treaty. After the dissolution of the Soviet Union, when Russia drafted a memorandum of understanding to reaffirm the treaty, then U.S. President Clinton declined to present it to the U.S. Senate, thus setting the stage for his successor, George Bush, to nullify the treaty unilaterally. The United States remains the only nation in the world to have used nuclear weapons so far, and the Bush administration consistently refused to rule out a unilateral nuclear strike. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, June 13th.
On this day, June 14th, in 1775, the Continental Army was formed in order to fight the American Revolutionary War. Although it was disbanded after the war in favor of state militias, its descendant, the U.S. Army, was formed by Congress 9 years later. Today, the U.S. Army has become the largest branch of America's armed forces and uses aggressive recruiting tactics to attract more soldiers. Opponents of the Army's recruitment strategies claim that they are manipulative and deceitful, and that they target working-class communities by offering benefits that many low-income people are otherwise denied. These military contracts often have catches, and they are also unilateral, meaning the military can alter the contents at any time. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Only a couple more items for June 14th, 1855, more Wisconsin news. Fighting Bob La Follette lives, pursued public policies to improve the lot of farmers, workers, children, and women. Also on this date in 1917, anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman ignores death threats and speaks at anti-conscription meeting chaired by her pal Alexander Berkman, who also speaks. Police would raid and arrest all men of draft age who could not show proof of registration. Also on June 14, 1928, in Argentina, Che Guevara, Cuban guerrilla, lives. Argentine doctor who reject both capitalism and orthodox communism.
Playa Girón es la primera derrota del imperialismo en América Latina, pero también es una de las primeras derrotas del imperialismo en escala mundial.
And in Mexico in 2006, a teacher's strike in the state of Oaxaca was met with military violence as Mexican army troops and police were sent to break up a peaceful picket in the state's capital. The local governor, Ulises Ortiz, also ordered the troops to smash a local radio station called Radio Plantón, which had been broadcasting a live blow-by-blow account of the teacher strike in March. The teachers, who were demanding better wages and an increase in the education budget, then occupied Oaxaca's Benito Juarez University and used the college radio station there to broadcast uncensored news. Some of the teachers who were arrested during this conflict are now missing and unaccounted for. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, June 14th. This Day in History is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis.
Through early morning fog I see visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please.
That's it for this week in Radical History, ending this week with a theme song from MASH and Why Not. Also looking for better and more radical songs to play at the end of my show. If you know of any bands who'd like the exposure or just interested in dropping me a line, please feel free to write me at themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Cannon is spelled C-A-N-N-O-N, so that's themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Again, until next week, always remember that I'm forever yours in the struggle, Mike Cannon.
You know, some anarchist affiliation that have been causing problems of breaking windows, rioting throughout the town.
Time will pierce our skin. It doesn't hurt when it begins, but as it works its way on in, the pain grows stronger, watch it grin. Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. A brave man once requested me to answer questions that are key. Is it to be or not to be? And I replied, oh, why ask me? Take or leave it if I please. And you can do the same thing if you please.
We were all feeling a bit shagged and fagged and fashed, it having been an evening of some small energy expenditure, oh my brothers.